Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
You're tuning into an episode of the Redefining Society podcast, hosted by Marco Cappelli. Let's face it, the future is now. We live in a hybrid analog digital society, and we must stop ignoring it or pretending that technology is not affecting us. The line between the physical and virtual worlds has become a figment of our imagination. On it, we are continually performing a dangerous balancing act, juggling convenience, privacy, freedom, security, technology, society, culture, and even the future of humanity. There is no better place than here, and no better time than now to muse on our relationship with technology and how to redefine what society means in this new age.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impacts of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
Hello, everybody. Here we go. It's been a while due to some travel on my side that I haven't recorded, but I think I still remember how to have a podcast. So we'll see. You guys will judge. I'm actually excited to have this conversation with Dr. Jason Nurse. He's already actually been on the show with Sean on Redefining Cybersecurity. He's actually an expert in the behavioral science and how that's obviously part, big part of cybersecurity. We think is all the technology and the machine, but it's probably our machine, our brain, that is the one that is more vulnerable sometimes. That'll be social engineering. But without further ado, I want to introduce this conversation, which is going to be kind of like a 101 recap on how cybersecurity is in all sense affecting our life. It's not just as the password, it's for the small business, it's the breaches we hear all the time, it's identity and many other fun things that we would rather not worry about, but unfortunately we have to think about those. So to help us doing that, everybody stay tuned. There is Dr. Jason Nurse. Hi Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi Marco, very nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like to talk about cybersecurity, although I get excited about other things like smart cities and autonomous vehicles and all the thing robotic, artificial intelligence. But, and you can say I'm right or I'm wrong, cybersecurity is still part of every single one of that. Even when we talk about space and satellite, there we go, communication, yeah, right?
Yeah, the reality is that cyber is everywhere now. I mean, when I got really involved in the topic of cybersecurity, back then it was information security, and everyone was talking about, you know, the whole world was information security. Let's focus on information. And then I remember a brief period where I was finishing my PhD, and it was briefly e-security, and everyone was talking about e-security, and it was, you know, the E was kind of adopted from email, and people tried to apply e-security. And now, you know, since then, probably very quickly, very soon afterwards, there was cybersecurity, and that really, you know, that really kind of caught on really, really well. It relates to technology everywhere, and as the world sort of embeds technology in basically everything that we're doing, cybersecurity becomes much, much more important, and spans everywhere. Really, you can't get away from it.
And the big question is, many times people want to get away from it. They don't want to understand the fact that they need to update their operating system, their phone, and change the password. And I know it's tough, but we'll get there. Maybe the behavior is going to take a good part of this. Let's start with a little introduction about you. Who is Jason Nurse? And you kind of already hinted at your interest in this. So give me the bigger picture here.
Hi, I'm Jason Nurse. I am an associate professor in I'm an associate professor of cybersecurity at the University of Kent in the UK. I'm also director of science and research at CybeSafe. So Jason is really a chap who's very, very interested and passionate about understanding cybersecurity and its impact on society, especially the sort of various new forms of technology that we have seen over the last 10 or so years. I mean, the world has really, really advanced quite significantly. And a lot of my research and emphasis has really been on what I like to call sort of the interdisciplinary aspects of cybersecurity. So how cybersecurity relates to individuals, to the persons, to homes, to buildings. A lot of my research, for example, has focused on smart home security, IoT security. I focus quite a bit on cyber psychology and topics like that, which sort of not only talk about security as sort of like a technical subject, but its implication and its impact on individuals and sort of our daily lives. So that's sort of me, part academic, part industry folk, but really just a passionate person, passionate about understanding the impact of cybersecurity on society.
That's great. And this is the kind of conversation I like to do. I mean, nowadays we're making plan to be at RSA conference in San Francisco, Black Hat, InfoSecurity Europe in London, all event that we are actually covering in person. And my role is always like, all right, you guys talk about all the SIEMs, the SaaS, all the system that you have. I like to talk about the human aspect. And I have to say that since the beginning of ITSP Magazine, when I start talking about this kind of things coming from a sociological perspective, I've always been interested in, all right, that's all cool, but there is not an easy button. This is how I understand. And like I said at the beginning, it's about our behavior. And maybe we can start with this. Is the fact that we can't really touch cybersecurity, we close the door, we lock the car, we whatever, because it's there, it's physical. Well, cybersecurity is more like, first of all, why is it not safe by default? Right? And second, why it's so hard to understand? And I think that could be a good conversation starter from a behavioral perspective, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And you sort of hit the nail right on its head where you mentioned we just don't have the approach to cybersecurity or to online security, let's say, as people have in the offline or the sort of more physical world. You know, if you tell someone, you know, be careful with your home or when you're leaving your home, ensure you lock your windows, you know, you shut your door, you check your windows or close. Online is a very, very different thing. And there are reasons for that, actually. From a psychology perspective, one of the realities is that the online world is so intangible to many that it makes it really difficult to understand and engage with that risk and the risk to online. You know, many people, as they were growing up, they were sort of accustomed with the things like stranger danger and sort of, you know, if you put your phone down here, you leave your laptop here, so you might come back and not find it. But the online engagement where someone maybe thousands of miles away can steal money from you or trick you into doing something, for many people, and especially certain generations, it can be really, really hard to kind of get to grips with that. One is just because we haven't been familiar with that, and some people haven't grown up with that understanding. The other one is because the online world is so intangible. For many people, it's sort of really difficult sometimes to get to grips with that. And this sort of explains why some people do things online that they would never do offline. And so the behavioral science and the behavioral component actually makes a big difference there. And it really helps us to understand why people, if you tell them, be careful of phishing email, or this person that messaged you might not actually be a real person. These are all reasons why this is actually such a challenging thing to deal with.
Is there a difference? Because, you know, I'm a Generation X. So I grew up with analog, and then I jumped on the computers, dial-up modem, and I like to be kind of nostalgic about this. And I understand what we do. There's some that decided not to get so interested into that, but that there is the native. Like people nowadays, they're born with a smartphone. They don't even know how to dial a rotary phone, which is kind of funny for me, but you know, it's the truth. Do you see a difference, a generational difference in the way that, does it help to be native digital?
I think it can be, but I think one of the interesting things is, so one way to think that, especially when you think about, you know, growing up almost digital native and sort of being familiar with the technologies and being familiar with the smartphones, the tablets, everything being internet connected. In some ways, yes, it helps because it means that people can engage with technology much better, much quicker, and they can sort of almost keep pace much better than, you know, someone that's probably a bit older, Gen X and so on. But the reality and what we're seeing sometimes is that the younger generations, in some regard, they sort of still don't connect that well with the risk because one, they think that it's not, once again, it's the reality about the tangibility of risk. The other thing is that they think, oh, it can't be so impactful, or oh, it can't have that big an impact. And sometimes they're sort of just lost in that dialogue of making that risk real, making that risk tangible. And in some ways, even if we think about general security. So some of my research also really tries to understand why can we explain people's behavior or lack of behavior with respect to certain things in the context of security by understanding the psychology of people's behavior. And one of the things there is that, for example, some people will behave much more risky at work because they have a feeling that the work security systems will be there to protect them. And I think we get a little bit of that with the digital natives in that they sort of think, okay, well, if I buy an iPhone, for example, I'm sure Apple has things in place to protect me, so I should be good. I should be able to do what I want. And I think we get some little bit of that as well. And I mean, one thing I always find even particularly interesting is, and this is one thing that I ask my students when I do my lectures, I ask them, you know, how many of you have antivirus software on your phones or anything like that? And they say, what antivirus software? Why would I have that? And then they say, well, you know, our mobile phones these days are computers 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, we all had antivirus on our computers because we all thought, oh, there might be a virus. Somebody might be impacted. Somebody might be affected. And these days, of course, people's mobile phones is the gateway to their life. But we still don't get that level of tangibility with risk. And I think part of it is just because, you know, young generations still grappling with understanding what's going on and being digital native and being something's online, something's offline. But then older generations, something's actually a little bit better understanding that risk, weirdly enough. And I think this is why it's really difficult to characterize people in the context of what happens with cyber, because everyone almost approaches cyber a little bit different. Sometimes it's based on their experiences, sometimes it's based on their thinking, their decision making, their perceptions, and all that kind of stuff comes into play.
Yeah, it's definitely complicated.
It is.
Sometimes I make jokes, and they're not really jokes, it's true. Like, I think about, in the United States, there is the Smokey the Bear. You're probably familiar, or you heard it. It's about, you know, it's on you to prevent a fire in the forest, right? It's a public campaign that was very successful back in the days, I think in the 50s or something like that. I wasn't born at that time, but you still see it. You know, it's a public service campaign. And I just don't know if we are doing enough of a good job as educator in a large perspective to actually start hammering on this since when kids are young. Or I feel like it's don't accept, you know, candies for stranger, don't accept a ride if you don't know it to go away. But I don't think we're doing this with cybersecurity, and I don't know why.
It's a good point. And one that I've seen is that different countries are grappling with this in different ways. So some of the education is provided in schools. Some of it is provided by somewhat, let's say, more public awareness campaigns. The reality is that for many countries, it's they're trying to pin down how best to do it and what to cover. And from what I've seen, different countries just approach things in such different ways. And so if I look at the UK as an example, there is some education on these type of topics in schools. There's some education on after school clubs. There's some education in different NGOs. Some information from governments. One that's tricky, probably the first thing I'll say, is that sometimes this information doesn't all align. You know, sometimes you would get one source saying one thing, another source saying something else, another source saying something else. And I think this even sort of exemplifies the challenge of when it, you know, comes to being secure online. You know, one question I'll even ask you, Marco, is, and this is a question I pose to my students all the time, and I say, okay, tell me what's a good password, or tell me how to create a good password. And you'll hear some people saying, okay, well, let me choose something incredibly complex. And then I say, okay, that's one option. And some people then say, well, actually, that's quite difficult for me to remember. How am I going to remember that? Oh, I'll write it down and I'll stick it somewhere. Okay, cool. And then I see some other students, and I see some other students, and you know, they say, so for example, in the UK, we have this guidance from the National Cybersecurity Center called three random words. So the idea is you pick three random words, you stick them together, that gives you something that's long enough to be a good password, but also you can remember it. So you don't have to necessarily write it down, potentially put it in an unsafe location. Mm-hmm. But the general point here and the general gist here is, even when it comes to kids, the difficulty of properly understanding or clearly understanding, you know, what they should be told and how do we get guidance consistent is a challenge that even many countries just don't align on. But the reality is, of course, attackers, threats are coming from everywhere. So it's an interesting problem, and it's definitely one that many, many countries are trying to grapple with, because when it comes to educating kids, when it comes to educating parents, what I've seen now actually in a number of situations is that sometimes kids are sort of the go-to for security advice in some homes and some families, because kids are that digital native. So, you know, oh, how do I, you know, a mom goes or dad goes to the kid and say, how do I fix this mobile phone? Like, this isn't, can you install this for me?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting dynamic when you think about all of a sudden the 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old now knows how to use all of, you know, some significant technology in the home better than the parents do. So I think this is all very, very interesting watching it play out.
Yeah, and I can see that. And it's but the level of complexity, it's such that even a, you know, just an individual that knows enough, I mean, unless you are a cybersecurity expert or a hacker, you know, a good one, or a bad one, because they know a lot of stuff too, but, you know, I don't know if I want to trust that part. It's like, I think about when I was a kid, my dad will be like, oh, the speaker is not working on the stereo system, you fix it. The TV is not changing channel, you fix it. But that was, you know, wired. It was analog, it was there, and now there is this entire complexity that goes. So let's go here. From your research, what are the most significant threats, the one that we really should look into when it comes down to, you know, our daily life? Maybe the small business, the mom and pop shop. I mean, you decide where you're going to go with that. Just to kind of focalize onto few things. I mean, you mentioned passwords. That's already one. We hope they go away, and they are going away. So that's a good thing.
Slowly, but
yeah,
but
we're getting there. They've been around since way too long. I don't know. Probably the Greeks or the Egyptian. I don't even know. They probably used password back there. So what are the things that we should be concerned as individuals nowadays?
Yeah, I think I would go especially with probably two things I would mention, and they're somewhat interrelated actually. So the first one is sort of social engineering, or what probably most people know as phishing attacks and phishing scams. And I think I flag this because phishing attacks, so phishing, for those of you potentially that might not know, this is when you get a message that pretends to be, that the aim of the message or the aim of the person behind the message is try to deceive you and trick you into believing that maybe someone is who they're actually not, and try to get you to perform some action that you typically would not aim to do. So, for example, you receive a text message claiming to be from your bank, telling you there's a problem with your account, please click this link to log in and update your account. So I think social engineering, phishing, top threat. It has been for a number of years, and whether it is the individual, the you or me, or whether it is a small business, or whether it is even a large business, it's the key way in which attackers, it's still the key way in which attackers breach systems, as cyber criminals breach systems. So I think phishing is probably the key one that I would flag immediately. And then one I would mention that actually, and this is especially for let's say the small to medium sized businesses, is ransomware. So ransomware is basically, think of it like this. There's some malware that, some malicious software that gets on your system. Potentially it's via phishing. So maybe someone sent you a message and you think it was someone else. You downloaded an attachment or you accessed some website. This malicious software downloaded on your computer and it executed. So it ran And what it essentially, Raspberry essentially does is it encrypts your system. So basically, it blocks access to you or blocks you from accessing your system. And it only allows access. It only allows your system to be decrypted or, let's say, unlocked if you pay some ransom, if you pay some amount of money to some source. Usually, this is via Bitcoin or something like this. Ransomware has over the last 5 years in particular, it has taken off. It's a significant threat. It hits businesses. It puts many businesses, it sort of actually causes many organizations to be put out of business. It has impacted schools. It has impacted hospitals, children's hospitals. It has impacted governments. It's been such a significant threat that governments across the world are sort of still scrambling a bit to understand how best to deal with it. And of course, to go after the perpetrators that are causing these attacks.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that both you mentioned, phishing start with phishing, social engineering, they trick you into doing something, and ransomware is a consequence of that one.
Yeah.
So there's still that tricky part.
There's a tricky bit, yeah.
That you need to keep your eyes open because there is really, I know that company will have list of threat detection and intelligence, so they know what they need to block, they know what they need not to block. But then even the individual, when they're not in the company, when they're not within the network, then they're vulnerable again. So I know a lot goes into training, a lot goes into getting it into your mind, and it goes back to that thing where, sure, you can have a great door and all the windows locked, but if you're going to leave the key in front under the mat.
Exactly. And the reality is that, for many, many individuals, it's really thinking about that really holistically. And I've seen situations where attackers understand that corporate networks might be super secure. So what they go after an individual from their personal network or their personal mobile phones, and then
use that to leapfrog.
Because the reality is that attackers are getting wiser. Attackers are getting much more clever. The entire cyber criminal space now is run like a business. I'll just mention this really briefly, but one thing I'd like to flag that I've seen a steady increase on now is attackers using generative AI and similar systems to make attacks.
Are we going
especially
there?
No, we're not. I said briefly.
I can talk about AI all the time.
but this is why I don't think we could really not at least mention it.
Oh, of course. It's the elephant in the room.
Exactly. I've seen an uptick of stories of different bits where attackers are leveraging the systems to write much more convincing phishing emails. Not only that, but also craft emails, so more or less spear phishing emails. And then also one of the big differences that attackers really struggle with one time is being able to target or let's say approach individuals in their own native language. Now all of a sudden you have a mechanism where you can craft a phishing email, you can get generate AI system to completely to basically translate completely perfectly into a particular person's language and then use that. So that's my bit.
I'm gonna add to that because in more B2B kind of conversation, we got to certain point where we were mentioning the fact that now you can replicate somebody's voice. So you get a call. I talk to people that are in the industry, CISOs, that somebody in the family get on and it's not them. But even if they do know that it's not them, there is that emotional moment where you're like, but what if it is? So it's really going to a completely different level of all of a sudden the voice of your nephew or your grandmother or your son can call you and it's that person. I mean, you want to get our voice, here it is on the podcast, right?
So
it gets even more complicated, which brings me to the next chunk of conversation, which is probably going to be bringing us towards the end, which is there a certain point that people just give up and say, damn it, there's nothing I can do about it. I get an email from, I don't know, the telecom provider. I get that from some large corporation that, of course, they have millions and millions of emails. my email was there, my social security, it's compromised. And ultimately, do people, again, do they just give up knowing that eventually it's going to happen? From a behavioral perspective, I'm afraid that that we really need to do a great job, which I think the cybersecurity industry is doing, to do this. Yeah. There is the education part. But if the user just give up, I think that's bad.
It is. And the unfortunate reality, so every year I participate in a bit of research around understanding people's attitudes and behaviors as it relates to security. And one thing that I want to flag that surprises me, but also sort of depresses me a little bit, I won't lie, every year, is that we ask people, you know, do you think online security is achievable, impossible, worth my time, under my control, and questions like this. And over the last couple of years, we've just been seeing more and more people just believe that online security is not achievable, it's not possible, and that it's not under their control. Because the reality is that as we get more and more involved online as a society, we sort of give our data, or we trust our data with a bunch of different providers. Now, almost bit by bit, we're seeing a lot of these providers, one by one, fall victim to attacks. And some of these breaches result in, okay, name, email, let's say much more basic. But then some of these breaches, one that I remember it was about a month or so ago now, one breach so significant that it resulted in the DNA of thousands of individuals being lost. And I think the reality is that, yes, we really have a problem, because when someone might put a clock on and say, well, I'm doing all I can do for my little self to protect myself, but the organizations that I'm trusting my data to, it's still getting lost. So what's the point? And that's what we see in the survey, that more and more people, they're gradually thinking, well, what's the point? I'm doing my bit, but I have to engage with these online services, but they're losing my data. And this is a really big problem. And, you know, something that we refer to, generally speaking, as learned helplessness, in that people just sort of believe, well, what's the point? I'm helpless. I can't do anything about it. So what's the point? And that's where we really need to get people away from, because then their security behavior lapses even more. Then they start to care less about what they're actually doing and the part that they can play. They start to think less about privacy, and it basically just provides attackers with even more low-hanging fruits for them to exploit.
And I'm going to reconnect as we go towards the end. The idea that the fact that is intangible until it touched, you know, real money, real family member, or the ransomware hit an hospital, so the machine or the ambulance cannot go around anymore. I mean, we've seen all of this, all these example breach where you mentioned the DNA, but I remember another one, I think in Finland or some other North European country, where they access mental health data.
Yes, I remember seeing that one. Yes.
So it gets personal. That's where I'm going. So this, you can start to touch it and feel it very close to home. But even if you drive your car, you know that there are chances you're going to get into an accident. But that doesn't stop you from having a good car in good performance, putting your seatbelt on. It took a while to get to the seatbelt, but now I think almost everybody do it. So the point is, even if you accept the fact that there is a percentage of insecurity, which is in everything we do, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do all you can to avoid it. So
exactly.
So here's my question for you. And I have decided this weekend to start asking this, if I remember, to every and in every conversation at the end. So the title of the podcast is Redefining Society, right? And sometimes I talk about maybe we need to redefine our social contract. Maybe we need to redefine our concept of privacy, maybe of identity, maybe. On your opinion, what do we need to redefine in our society to, let's say, not fix, but address all of this problem of cybersecurity in our behavior? Is there something that we need to say, you know, maybe I can look at it the same way that we used to look at it 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago? Anything that comes to mind?
I would really say the focus on the importance on the human side of cyber. So I know it's been sort of gaining traction, you know, for the last 5-10 years even. But the reality is I still engage many, many security professionals that still believe that cyber is the technology. Mm-hmm. And that's what they view it. Cyber is a technology. Many organizations, their cybersecurity team, their cybersecurity focus is really on, do we have enough pen testers? Do we sort of critically analyze the system from that particular way? And they sort of view the human side of cyber as a little bit of an afterthought. Or if we get some time, let's consider that. Or, oh yes, phishing. Phishing is an issue, but you know what? We'll put the technology in place to deal with phishing. It might get through, but then we'll train people. We'll give them a module to do once a year, and then that'll be fine. If I would sort of say one thing, it would really be to get people, to get organizations to think much more clearly about what the human side of security actually means and its importance actually, and its importance within organizations in addressing cybersecurity as a topic, as a problem, as a challenge, because it's much more than just it's much more than just the technical components. It's much more than just sort of one-off security training. It's really about understanding people, understanding their context, ensuring that security works for them, ensuring that security fits their day-to-day, and basically thinking about that in the context of what people are actually doing. Because the reality is that, and this is a quote I heard many, many years ago, but I love to sort of repeat or highlight, is if security doesn't work for people, it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work for them, it's going to impact the organization in some way, shape, or form. It could be that they breach now, it could be that they breach in a couple months, a couple years. But this is what I would love to get organizations to think more clearly about, whether it be the small business or the mom and pop shop, or the large organizations that you know have and that invest quite heavily in cyber.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think it's both. I mean, technology can help. Mm. It can be a big filter. Yeah. The car can, I'll go back to the example of the car. The car can get as good as detecting a car that brakes in front of you and slamming on the brake without you doing anything.
Yeah.
But it's still probably not going to protect you 100%. So yeah. You still need to, at least for now, drive it. And so I think for cybersecurity is the same thing. I mean, you almost need a license to use, you know, your smartphone.
Right?
The car. Did you pass the test on how to protect your data on your phone? But I don't know if we're ever going to get there. Well, listen, Jason, of course, a lot to think about. We kind of focus on three specific things. There could be obviously a lot more. AI could definitely be 6 or 7 episodes just for that.
Yeah, just by itself.
Just by itself. But I think this is enough. And I hope, as I always hope, that people that listen to this conversation think a little bit more about the topic that we discuss. And if they do that, I'm sure they can start looking at a few things differently. And maybe just because of that, as you said, be a little bit more secure just because you're thinking about it and you just don't expect technology to do. I mean, I hope that there'll be an easy button. Do I bet my money on it? Not really. So we'll see. And maybe you'll come back sometimes and we talk about the AI part of that, because from a behavioral perspective, I mean, the AI and generative AI and the way we're perceiving that, I don't know if you have interest in that. I assume you do. It's an entire new paradigm, right?
Very much so. The average person and how they're thinking about it, how they're using it, how they interpret it. And, you know, to be very honest, we've just seen the beginning, right? We've just seen there's been a significant amount over the last year, but it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Every day I'm seeing something else new coming out, something super exciting that could empower our lives quite significantly.
Exciting and sometimes unsettling. So
yes, there's always that part.
There is that part. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show. For everybody that wants to get in touch with you, there'll be a link to your social media in the notes. And I obviously invite people to share this conversation so that maybe someone else that is missing it, they get the opportunity to reflect and think and maybe be a little bit more secure just because of this. And of course, subscribe to Redefining Society podcast. And Jason, thank you. Thank you very much for stopping by.
Thank you a lot for having me over, Marco.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Society podcast, hosted by Marco Cappelli. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then take a moment to rate this show and add it to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. We invite you to come back for more stories and follow Marco Cappelli on his social media as he continues this journey into the future of our societies.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSP Mag 24.